All right. Well, welcome to the Gospel Nobodies podcast interview today. My name is Zach Mason, and I am hosting this today, and I'm excited to be here. And just a little bit about the podcast for those joining in, maybe for the first time or new. We are here to talk about Gospel Nobodies, those who are doing God's work in ministry and advancing the kingdom in the small, rural, forgotten places around the globe. And that's a huge deal. And so we want to highlight that and be an encouragement to those who are doing similar works, elsewhere. And so today we have with us, Tom Desmond, from Wisconsin, and we're excited to get to know him a little bit and what God's doing up there, and hear from him. So Tom, why don't you come on, just introduce yourself, tell us a little about you, and your family and your ministry.
Yeah. Hey everybody. So yeah, I am the pastor of Springbrook Church in Antigo and White Lake, Wisconsin. We are kind of doing a multi-site thing for now, at least. I'm married to Crystal. We've been married almost 15 years, and we have two boys, Jonah and Silas, who are, 10 almost and 8 almost here. They're coming up. So we've been in Northern Wisconsin for about 11 years. We came here to plant the church with Acts 29, and we've been part of Acts 29 since the start of the church. So we've been in the network a little while now, and yeah, so church is trying to reach a very rural part of our state, and mostly farms and forests, and a lot of potato farming and a lot of forestry. Those are the two main industries in our area. And yeah, we're just plugging away, trying to reach these wonderful people with the gospel. Yeah.
Very cool, man. So how did you get to Wisconsin?
Yeah. So I grew up in Chicago, and grew up kind of just coming this way for vacationing. It's actually kind of a tourist area as well, just because of all the forests and the lakes and rivers and all the natural beauty. So I was one of those people who came to rural places to use rural places and not really love them, not care for them, but just that's how I got exposed to the area, was just through camping up here and being a part of that with family vacations. But there was just something about the natural world that gripped my heart. And when the time came to plant a church, and this is a much longer story that maybe I'll be able to tell part of, but I just felt compelled to come to a place that just had gripped my heart, and I fell in love with the natural beauty of it without really realizing the depth of the darkness that's here at the time. Sure. So, yeah. That's kind of the short story. But
okay, well, good, man. I think that's great. And so you've been there for 11 years, time of Acts 29. You mentioned that you're a church, you know, doing a multi-site thing. Tell us a little bit about that. How did that get started? What you're doing, how that's going?
Yeah, we did not start out with the plan to be multi-site. That was like, I was pretty anti the idea initially, and for a lot of cynical reasons, of course. And that's, sure. If you know me well, you know that I'm a cynical person. So I had some reservations about it, but the way it came about was we had planted here in Antigo, and Antigo is a city of about 8,000 people. It's not tiny, not huge. We have the shopping and some of the restaurants and things that people will come to from further out in the county. And as time went on, we started to attract probably 20 to 30 people from the eastern part of the county. And they were plugged into the church as much as they could be, living 20 or 30 or 40 miles away. But they'd come on Sundays. And eventually it got to a point where they approached me, or a small group of this crew approached me and said, "Hey, you guys talk about church planting a lot. So would we ever plant a church like where we live in our part of the county?" Because it's very interesting that they would not consider themselves a part of Antigo as a community. They're in the same county, same region. They come to Antigo for their shopping needs, but they don't really see themselves as a part of that, that city, that community. So they reached out to me, over time, just kind of planting the bug in my ear about what would it look like to start something out here. So it kind of started with the elders and I would gather together to pray together about this, started to think about what that would look like. And over the course of probably took about 2 years to start getting things rolling. But we started out with a core group, that core group of people, about 10, probably 10 adults. And we started just meeting in our home with them as a community group and trying to build a core, just plant another church, basically, with this group that had already been plugged in at our church for a while. And so trying to instill a vision for what this could look like. And we did that for about a year or more, and then started slowly doing more things out there with that group. Got into the school, had a Wednesday evening Bible study with them and the community people, and then eventually launched Sunday night services out there, where I'm still leading that. I'm basically, for the sake of time, we're just kind of replicating the service between morning and evening. And we started meeting in the school for worship services. And then just about a year ago, we inherited a Presbyterian church that had closed up, and they needed to get rid of the building. And we reached out to them, and just through the Lord's gracious work, he made that happen where we could inherit this building. So that was a real huge gift. And so now we're in this established church building, and it's been in that community for 100 years. And we're just able to take ownership of it for nothing. And now that's where we've been meeting still for, so now for about about 3 years, we've been meeting out there, 2 years in the current building we're in, and then a year before that in the school. So that's kind of that's basically how it came about. It wasn't really my brainchild. It was just this group of people that had a heart for White Lake, which is another little town that's only about 300 people. So Antigo's got 8,000. White Lake has 300, probably 800 in in the zip code area, the mailing area of White Lake. But it's a small community, but they really felt compelled to have something where their friends, their neighbors, their coworkers could worship. So that's how that came about.
Yeah. So how far of a drive? You said 20, people were coming 20, 30, 40 miles. Like, how long would that take people to get, like, before you went to two sites, how long would people to get to church or worship?
Yeah. So for the most part, there's not a lot of traffic. So you're looking at, if you're 20 miles out, it'll take about 20 minutes to get there.
So 20 to 40 minutes.
So 20 to 40, depending on where you are in relation to the church there. But I'd say that most of the crew that goes out there now would probably be about a 30-minute drive to Antigo.
Okay.
So not terribly long by rural standards, but
Well, that's the thing, right? A rural drive is a lot different than city. People in cities are like 30 minutes. I'm not going to go 30 minutes for something. But here it's, everyone's used to driving through. People drive 45 minutes an hour to work and no traffic. It's just how long it takes to get there.
Right.
Yeah, that's cool. So how much do the two sites interact, like the congregations? Like, what does that look like? How one are the two sites?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think the answer is we're one in the sense that we share a pastor. And I know. And that's
helpful.
So we have an elder team that's made up of people from both locations. So there is, we have a unified elder board. I'm the predominant preacher at both locations. And then we've just brought on a worship leader part-time, and he's been doing both. So among the staff and elders, there's definitely common
faces.
And so, and we just have shared resources and finances and all of that. But as far as culture, as far as, where people would identify, it's going to be one or the other. Only way we've tried to bring those people together, we do a few things together. We do Easter all together. baptisms all together.
Oh,
so
cool.
We do like one big baptism service in the summer.
That's wonderful.
So we do all that together. And then I think this year we did Christmas, the day after Christmas, whatever, the 26th was the Sunday near Christmas. So we did that all together too. But outside of that, they are pretty distinct in terms of the groups that are there and where they would identify as their church. And I'm not sure. I'm still like, I feel like we're just navigating through all of this like as we go. So I really don't know what that looks like long term.
Well, yeah, and so you've been doing it for three. Yeah, you're doing it for 3 years, two of which have been crazy. The last 2 years, right? So like, you had one normal year, of doing it. So it's definitely must feel new still. The reason I'm so curious about it because we find ourselves in a similar area, where people are driving 30, 40 minutes to come to us. From other counties even. So like our counties are very close together the way they're shaped. And so people, and there's one like highway that connects three counties, just like goes straight through. And so our heart is to plant churches in the main areas of those counties. But we're, you know, the trouble is, you know, could we both survive healthily with cutting our resources like that? And so our idea has been what you're doing. We haven't done it yet. And maybe if our church is listening or hearing it for like the first time, but, the idea would be to plant a congregation, and to have some sort of like shared preaching or something like that. So that's really encouraging to hear that you've been doing that. And that it's been going well, it sounds like. So much you inherited a building. Yeah, that'd be cool if we did that.
I think that's true. That was a totally unexpected thing for sure. The building, you hear when you're a church planter, you hear all these amazing miracle stories of people getting buildings, and for years I'm like, yeah, it'll never happen. Again, I'm cynical, right? So then the Lord showed me that I'm an idiot a lot of times. So that was really a blessing. But I think for me, like the thing that compelled me to get this church structured the way it is, this dual congregation, was that I realized that people are not coming here in droves to plant churches. And so if we're going to do something, it may need to be me and Springbrook Church that does it. Because we could sit on our hands for a decade and wait for somebody to show up to plant in a town of 300 people, which may happen. The Lord could do it, but like we're here, so let's try to do it. And so we've just basically taken that approach and said let's do as the Lord opens up opportunities. Let's take the risks and do what we need to do to reach these smaller towns that probably aren't going to have a lot of church planters being drawn in to them.
Yeah. Well, there's a question from Facebook. It says, how is what you're doing in White Lake different from multi-site? And I think I think you use the term multi-site, but I think it's different. One of the ways I heard you say it's different, I want you to answer the question, but was that you preach at both locations live. It's not like a video or anything.
Right.
How else might you see that it's different?
Yeah, I mean, I think that that's the, I think I would say it's multi-site. You know, I don't think that I am suggesting it's not. It's a multi-site model. I mean, there's live preaching. We're strongly committed to that. I think the only way it may be different otherwise is just that White Lake has their group of people and Antigo has their, they are two different congregations, you know, in a sense.
Yeah.
And you're always going to have that. You're in every, whenever you have multiple groups of people gathering for worship, those are distinct congregations and that's, they should be.
Yeah. We find that even like in multi-services in the same building, it still feels like two different congregations. So,
yes, for sure. So I think you're always going to have that kind of dynamic. I would say what we're doing is multi-site. It's just not maybe
cool.
The traditional model of multi-site where you video feed a guy in and And then you might just have a campus welcome to this church. And here's the guy talking on a screen. That's not obviously our model, but yeah, we definitely are multi-site in the sense that we share resources as a single congregation. We share an elder board, share a pastoral staff, but we have two different gatherings with two different groups of people.
So. Yeah. Yeah. I think one of the things you said is just really compelling. Like not, you know, we're not, it may take a while to get some guy who wants to plant a church in town 300, but you're there already reaching those people. And so to send them back and to find a creative, you know, innovative way to send them back and still have a church and a called qualified team of men who are leading them is great, man. So I think it's awesome. It's encouraging for me. Like I said, like we're looking at something similar, maybe in the future. Our plan is like the next few years to launch something like that. But yeah, I mean, who knows what the Lord's doing.
Yeah. It's something that you gotta be slow about. It took us 2 or 3 years before we even started walking that path of just prayer consideration, trying to see if this is feasible. You know, there's just a lot to figure out, especially when you're kind of doing something already over here, now adding something over here. Yeah, it just takes a long time to consider those things. And we definitely have fumbled our way through it in a lot of ways. I haven't figured out fully how to do this. And to a sense, that's who I am. I'm throw it at the wall, see if it sticks kind of guy. And so it is what it is. It may not be good. It may not be right. It may not be what we do 5 years from now with it. Who knows? But that's where it's at. Yeah.
That's great, man. So, yeah. So kind of transition from that, what's just something that's going well, at your church? Like what's going well? What are you guys doing well at right now?
And I think it's one of the things that's been really beautiful over the last couple of years. And I think this has come out even more clearly in the COVID season is just the gospel culture that we've been trying to create here is flourishing in a lot of ways. The Ray Ortlund thing with his book, The Gospel, that little 9 marks book that he wrote, I read that probably 5 years ago, and it changed the trajectory of my ministry. I don't think that's an overstatement. Like, I think that's maybe an understatement. Like, it just compelled me to something that I had never seen before. And so this gospel doctrine leads to gospel culture thing was life-changing, and we probably about 5 years ago, 4 or 5 years ago, we started preaching that pretty intentionally and trying to make those connections in people's minds. And it's just been an amazing thing to see it actually happening, you know, apart from me, apart from us at all, the Lord has just been using his word and using his people to encourage one another to build one, just to live those one another's out in a really beautiful way. So I think that's one thing that I'm super encouraged by in our church. We got lots of problems, of course, like every church, but it's still just a beautiful thing to see people come around each other in gospel community and actually not just talk about it, but to live it out and see that. Just had a Bible study this morning with a group of guys that we meet at 6:30 on Thursdays, and that just the vulnerability and honesty and the love that these guys have for each other, it just as a pastor to be able to be in that room and watch them do that without me having to try to force this or facilitate this. It's just, it happens by the Spirit's grace and power. It's like, it's just a really beautiful thing to behold. And
That's cool. So I want to hear more though about like, how did you develop that? Like you read the book, I think you mentioned you talked to people about it, but like, what does that look like? How did you create a gospel culture?
Yeah, I think for me, it was being able to see tangibly in the scriptures where that is. It's everywhere. Okay. Like it just is everywhere when you read the New Testament, that what Jesus does for us should lead us onward to be living that out in life. So I always say that you don't put the cart in front of the horse, right? The gospel has to drive that cart of culture. You can't have it the other way around. But But I think the way that it has come about, at least initially or in part, is just by being really intentional in preaching where the text shows that. And then when it does show that, making that a real clear connection for people. And as people start to see that this is what the Word of God is calling us to, then there's going to be an overflow of obedience and love and joy in that, as Christ works out his word in people's hearts. So I think for me, it was just not just hearing the concept or reading about it from this book, but then going to the scriptures and saying, wow, it really is everywhere, that the grace of God leads to how we live. And I guess I knew that before all of this, but it was that book by Ray that really connected the dots for me. And yeah, so I think that we were really intentional about preaching it and making that clear in the pulpit. And then, you know, I'm not really like a big systems guy. I'm more of an organic, let's see what happens with this. And so I didn't really force a program in our church to try to make this happen. I really just started preaching it and then trying to model it in my own life towards others. And then just seeing kind of the domino effect of that, it has just kind of been what we're observing. So there's not really a like, oh yeah, okay, so this is going to be the thing you show up to, and now you're going to live in gospel, you know, community. It's more of it just, this is what the word calls us to. So who's in your life that needs to have this love or have this forgiveness or have whatever the issue may be that Christ has given to you that you need to give to others.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, I love that. And you mentioned modeling it. I think that's so key. It's like, as we, as pastors, as we walk in the light, people see that it's not as horrifying as it sounds. They also can walk in the light, you know what I mean? And so, cause it is scary to walk in the light, to be vulnerable, to be honest, that you can feel the forgiveness that Christ has purchased for you. Right. And so I love that modeling. It's huge. I think that's great, man. We have a couple other questions coming from Facebook. David asks if you ever see White Lake being an independent church.
I would love it. I would love to see it be an independent church. Part of me would love it. Part of me would hate it because I love those people, and I don't want to give those people up to someone else. You know, so that I am conflicted in my heart on it for sure. Because I see those people as friends and brothers and sisters in Christ. I care for them deeply. So that's true in Anago too. I wouldn't want to give it up, but I could see a world in which it is, that it does spin off into an autonomous church, given the right set of conditions and leader, and that the Lord would raise somebody up to take that. That would be a possibility. And like I said, I am conflicted in my heart about it, but yes, sure. I can see a world in which it does become its own thing.
Yeah. That's a good place to be. If you were too excited, you know, to give up, that wouldn't be good either. So that's a great place to live.
My wife Crystal was just telling me the other day, if White Lake ever becomes its own church, I'm still going to be going to it because it's, she loves those people and we both do. So I don't know what that looks like long-term, but
yeah. Yeah. So I'm just curious, like, how do you rest well? Cause I feel like, I mean, I've preached two services back to back, but it gives me the rest of Sunday to kind of nap and rest. If you're preaching the morning and you're preaching the evening, like, is that exhausting? How do you rest?
I think, you know, you get into a rhythm and you figure it out. You know, we have the afternoon blocked off. We really don't schedule anything in between services. So that we can come home and just be together. And it has actually created a little less opportunity for us to like go out to eat after lunch with people.
Sure.
Because we're trying to guard that time. And it's not to say that we never would do that, but it becomes a little bit more difficult for us to want to commit to those kind of things, which it is that does hamper some ministry opportunity for sure. But we do try to block out that middle of the afternoon time frame as best we can. But it just is a long day. I mean, there's just no question. It by the end of the service in the evening, I'm wiped. I'm done, you know, and it's all right. You know, and I make sure that I take the rhythms of rest on my days off and get rejuvenated. And yeah, I mean, I don't feel like I'm walking around ready to burn out by any means.
That's great.
But yeah, you just got to kind of figure out your rhythm and routine. Yeah.
So what do you do for fun then as you rest?
Yeah. I mean, I love being outside, love the outdoors. That's one of the great reasons I love being rural is just the nature. So this time of year, when we're plunged into nearly utter darkness and feet and feet of snow, up here in the north, I snowshoe, just get out into the woods and just traipse through the woods with my snowshoes on and pray and enjoy God's world. So I do that. I love hanging out with my kids and my wife, and we just find a lot of fun together. And so that's been, I don't have a ton of hobbies. I raise chickens, so I'm doing that. I'm figuring out how to be a chicken farmer. I snowshoe, I walk through the woods. I do, so
pretty boring. I've never heard snowshoe like as like a verb. Snowshoe. So are these like the kind of snowshoe you see on TV? It looks like a tennis racket on someone's foot, or are these that's kind of the more modern specialized snowshoes?
Yeah. I have more modern style, but I've got some friends that have the traditional, like the teardrop shape, giant shoe thing. Yeah. So it's basically the same concept, but mine's a little bit more rectangular than that.
Okay. That's cool circular. Though.
Yeah.
I feel like I would. So we just had like a foot of snow dumped on us this past weekend, which is, we usually get one big snow a year, but it's not like this typically. I feel like, my wife might argue with me, that if I had something comfortable to wear in the snow, I'd love being out in it, but I just like get wet because I don't have actual like snow stuff, like shoes.
Yeah.
So my socks get wet and I get miserable and I'm like, I'm gotta go inside. So that sounds like it'd be fun, because I'd enjoy being out in the snow if I didn't. And I sound like a baby now, but if I didn't have like wet socks, you know, like that's the worst.
You know, it's true. You got to be equipped. You got to have the right gear. So when you live somewhere like northern Wisconsin, you live in basically six months of snow.
You gotta have the stuff then.
So you got to have the stuff. And if you have the stuff and you're not dying of freezing and you're not super wet, it's really enjoyable to be out there. Yeah.
I don't know if I could talk my wife into getting me snowshoes for one snow a year, but maybe.
Probably not.
Yeah. So I used to just tie Walmart bags around my shoes to keep the snow out, you know, but then you might slip and fall pretty easily. So that's cool.
Yeah, that's true.
Chris, I have a question for you. How do you keep such a well-groomed beard?
So I got on here today. I haven't even looked at myself today. And I was like, oh my gosh, look at this thing. This is ridiculous.
And, that's good, man. I
apologize to all of you. So it's been a while since I've touched the beard, and it's showing really badly. Yeah.
Clearly we're fans of beards here, so I wouldn't worry about it at all. No, that's good though. But man, I appreciate you coming on. I'm really encouraged by what God's doing up in Wisconsin, through your church, man. If someone was planning rural, what kind of advice would you give them just right off the bat? Like here's some things that you need to know planting in a rural place.
Yeah, I think the big thing is make sure you know the people that you're going to. And I did not initially really know the people. I knew the area and I loved the area, but it wasn't until I was here for a while that I realized what the real spiritual needs in this place were as you get to know people. So I would say if you don't, I mean, a lot of guys go back home and they're familiar with the territory. I parachuted into a place I didn't grow up. So for me, it's vital that you know the people and that you have a sense of what their spiritual needs are and how your church can help meet those needs. So that's crucial. And I think, I'd say get involved in a residency before you go to plant, be in a healthy gospel-centered church. Did not have that opportunity 11 years ago to do that. I don't know that anyone was doing residencies very much back then, at least not in my orbit. And man, I wish that I could have had that. So I really would encourage anybody out there who's looking at planting get into ideally a healthy rural church, and just plug away for a year or two before you go out and do it.
Yeah, that's great. That's great advice, man. Well, hey, thank you, Tom. For everyone watching, thank you for joining us. You know, come back next month. We'll have another interview, seeing what God is doing, how he's advancing his kingdom, the small, rural, and forgotten places across the globe. But appreciate you, Tom. Appreciate everyone listening and your questions. And we'll see you guys next month.
Awesome. Thanks, Zach. Appreciate you, bro.
Thank you.